evening, Chris from Orange County. Hi. Thank you. Okay. Hi, I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Damien for asking me to come out here and participate in my own recovery. It's always a privilege and an honor to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome all the new people and tell you that if you're a hopeless alcoholic, that you're in the right place, and I'm glad you're here tonight. I want to thank Sarah for a great 10-minute pitch. That's why I love coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I get to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to say happy birthday to the birthday people, Mike and John. You know, one thing, though, John, I think it was John that said, where's John? There you are, John. You talked about being, like, crazy. You were done being crazy. I'm crazy right now. So, gosh, I wish that would have happened for me. But I got to talk to you after the meeting, and maybe I can work out, do whatever you're doing. But, yeah, very crazy today. I had some really great ideas today. Really great ideas. I knew my life was a mess. So this is what my head told me today, that my life is really messed up. Like, I'm getting ready to finally finish college and get my bachelor's degree, and I'm only 42. I've been working on it for a little while. But my head told me today, this morning, actually, I woke up and it said, hello. You suck. And it told me that that girl when I was 16 years old, when I got shot, she was going to be back ghetto fabulous, and you will never finish college. And I believed that today. And then I talked to my friend Diana, who's been sober a really long time, who's, you know, she's watched me from the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so she helped me kind of figure some things out about the crazies. But I showed up anyways. That's a good thing about, you know, training your feet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I showed up anyways because I didn't have, she was back a little bit, and she said, you don't have anything to tell those people. And I said, well, but if I tell my sponsor I'm not showing up because I knew that ghetto fabulous girl when I was 16 was going to come back and tell y'all something crazy, my sponsor would not have been happy with that. And she's not always the nicest lady when you upset her. So I said, you know, I think I'd rather go to that meeting. So I'm here tonight. And I'm really grateful to be here. But generally speaking, I want to tell you my stuff. And that is, my sobriety date is January 19th, 1996. I have a home group, and that's the Bellflower Big Book Group, just like Sarah. And I have a sponsor, and that's Karen G. And I tell you those things a lot like the reason why Sarah did. Those things for me are absolutely vital for me to be able to sit here with you, whether I'm crazy or not. And I have a home group because I learned to have my feet trained in that home group. In Bellflower, when I first showed up there, I didn't necessarily want to be there. I don't like big crowds and lots of people and hugging and all that stuff. And they're really all into that there. And I told my sponsor, you know, this isn't my deal. And she's like, okay, well, go ahead and get in the greeting line. And I said, like, you know, she's not really good at listening, I guess. So I'll wait a little bit and let her remind her that's not my thing. I don't like shaking hands and hugging. And so I said, I went up to her and I said, you know, Julie, I'm not a people person. I don't really want to shake hands and stuff. And she's like, yeah, I heard you. And I said, I think we should find something different for me, you know, something I like, maybe something I'll enjoy a little more. And she goes, yeah, go ahead and stand right there in the greeting line. So I was like, wow, so it's going to be like that. Okay. So I stood in the greeting line, and a day at a time I got to know you people. And a day at a time you helped me save my life. Who knew? You know, who knew? Taking direction that was contrary to my own beliefs. A day at a time in that same home group, I learned some respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, just like the kind of respect I see here. I learned that I can't get up and talk and chit-chat with my friends. I can't move around because I don't know if when I'm doing that, the guy sitting next to me isn't going to, or the gal sitting next to me isn't going to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that she needs to hear to save her life. So I learned to just keep my mouth shut and to listen. And who knows, maybe they'll be saving, you know, my life that night. I just wish you all luck tonight, because who knows what's gonna come out of my mouth. But and so those are some of the things I learned in my home group. I have a sponsor because I share with my sponsor some of these great ideas I have, and usually it ends up with sheer laughter and hysterics on the other end of the phone. But some clear-cut direction and how to take contrary action. My sponsors help me work through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and help me to incorporate that in my life. She's taken me through the 12 traditions and helped me to incorporate that through my life. And I'm super grateful for that woman. You know, it's interesting. She, my sponsor suffered a stroke, and she's, you know, had some health challenges. But she's still willing to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that just blows my mind. You know, if somebody asks her to sponsor them, I've never heard her say, no, I'm really not feeling well today. Or, you know, sometimes I get really tired and I can't help you. Every single time I call, if she doesn't answer the call, she calls me right back. And that's a service. And I just want to be a tiny bit of what that woman is. So I just start doing what she's doing. And I live in Orange County and I drive to the Pacific Group in Brentwood every Wednesday, just so I can have a little bit of what she has. And I'm super grateful for that lady. She's really saved my life and helped me change it in such a marvelous way. But I've been taught to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I was raised in Wilmington, which is in Wilmington, California. There is such a place. And it's towards the end of the 110 freeway in L.A. County. It is this quaint harbor town. No, it's not. It's actually ghetto fabulous, and I was raised there with my grandparents. My mom, you know, she appears to be an alcoholic. She drinks a couple of bottles of wine a night just to unwind. She's diabetic, and they threaten to cut stuff off like legs and limbs, stuff like that. But she says pretty clearly, it's none of the doctor's business how much I drink. And I say, okay. And so she's always drank like that. I was the baby that was in the bar. So it was in 1970 I was born, and my mom would bring me with her to the bar. And it was okay because I was sleeping, so it didn't necessarily matter. But if you ask my mom if she's an alcoholic, she will definitely tell you she is not an alcoholic. And my grandparents saw, you know, that I kind of lived in bars when I was an infant, and so they thought that wasn't good. And so they raised me. And my grandparents were really good people, hardworking, blue-collar folk. You know, they gave me all that they could and more. I mean, they just really loved me a lot. And I always felt like I was being smothered. My mom was the oldest of six, and her youngest sibling was, I think, 13 when I was born. So I grew up with, like, a big brother. And they were always there with me, and I played softball growing up, and they thought that I should be like this tough softball girl. And I thought that was a good idea, too. And so, but like, I really preferred to be a different kind of kid than I grew up. So, you know, when I had games, like, you'd see my whole family out in the stands, and I totally hated that. I wanted to be that, you know, 11-year-old kid that smoked cigarettes, that cursed, that didn't care, that had not one person in the stands looking out for them. That's what I aspired to be. And my family just wasn't going to have that. But I had a significant shakeup in my family. My grandfather left, and, you know, people died and things. And as a result, I started getting, like, bitter. But generally, from the get-go, I've always been restless, irritable, discontent. My skin was always on too tight, and I've heard that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I didn't have any particular pressing problems, but when I was about 14 years old, I went to a girlfriend's house. Her brothers were babysitting us. They were home from college, and they had a couple of cases of beer. And I thought it was a good idea to just take the beer. I thought it was an excellent idea. My friends necessarily didn't agree with that, and so it took some convincing. And I knew right then, from that very moment, I needed new friends, because, like, they just weren't the fun kind of gals I had hoped they would be. So we stole the beer, we proceeded to drink the beer. And, you know, I had been raised growing up in Catholic school, and I thought it would be a great idea to toilet paper the convent. And new one know that that's where the nuns live, the sisters. And they were our teachers. I thought that would be really fun. So we continue to drink the beer, and we go to the Pioneer Chicken, and we put our beer in the suitcase, I'm sorry, in a pillowcase, and we go to Pioneer Chicken, and we steal all their toilet paper. And we drink beer all the way there. And this kind of gives you an idea of what Wilmington is like. You know, on the way there, I'm like popping open my Miller, and we're walking down the street. Wilmington's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. And I see, you know, Mrs. Sanchez, and I'm like, "What's up, Mrs. Sanchez?" And she's like, you know, she doesn't say, "I'm going to call your grandmother. You need to not be drinking beer." She's just like, so that's Wilmington. And we get to the convent, and it was like the longest walk I'd ever taken. It took maybe 3 hours to get to the convent. And we laughed all the way there, and it was a lot of fun, but I felt like maybe I'm coming down with the flu. Because my head was spinning, I just did not feel well, I was perspiring like crazy, and my mouth was starting to have this strange salivating sensation. And I knew I just needed to rest my head on something cold. So I did. I rested my head on something cold, and I closed my eyes. The next thing I knew, I fell over, and I started to vomit. Newcomer know that the nuns don't like it when you vomit at the foot of the Blessed Mother. Who knew, really? They were very upset, and I got into a lot of trouble. But a new one, I want you to know that consequences never mattered to me, ever. It was just part of the deal. You know, I had no idea at that point that I buy the whole package when I pick up a drink. I don't buy, you know, I'm not the kind of alcoholic that'll take a few drinks and get tipsy. I'm not even the kind of alcoholic that'll take a few drinks and get wasted. I'm the kind of alcoholic that I'm totally unpredictable when I start drinking. There's no guarantees when I'll stop, if I'll stop, if it'll be this week, next month, 3 years from now. I mean, there's really no guarantees. So, and it was like that from the very beginning. I didn't drink every day from that day forward. I was only 14. I drank as often as I could. And in Catholic school, eighth grade is elementary school. So the very next year, I was in high school. And I went to high school keg type parties. But, you know, Catholic school kids are really awesome. They, like, are into going to college and getting good grades. And that just wasn't my thing. I knew that there was more out there than that. So I had friends who were really fun people. They were, like, involved with gangs and stuff. And that I wasn't too concerned about. But they were, like, really dedicated party people. Like, they had things like ditching days. Like, they would actually dedicate a day where nobody goes to school and they just party. I love it. Or you can go to their homes and mom's passed out on the couch and nobody seems to mind that you're there drinking and smoking weed and all that stuff. And it was just a blast. And so that's who I typically hung out with, and it was great. But, you know, other things come with that. And as I mentioned, you know, I got shot by the time I was 16 years old, and that wasn't ever a part of my plan. I don't think it's a part of anybody's plan. Well, I mean, unless you kill yourself or whatever, or try. But that wasn't a part of my plan. I was just having fun. If you would have told me at that time, you know, by the time you're 17 years old, you're going to get in a fist fight and get drugged down the street in San Pedro, I would not have ever believed you. Because, see, I'm not that kind of girl. Like, I may like to hang out with you, but I come from a good family. I'm just not that kind of girl. But that's exactly what happens to me when I drink. That's the whole picture that I buy. And I don't mind. You know, when I drink, stuff happens, and it's never personal. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm just having fun. And, you know, by the time I'm 18, I had been hanging out with this guy since we were eight, and he was a good friend. But he was always the guy that was just kind of like the guy that hung around me. You know, he was just like my little groupie. And one day he said, you know, "I think we need to get married." And I just didn't want to be rude. New one, no, that's never a real good reason to get married, but that's what we did, and we had a baby right away and another one right after that. And he and I drank a lot alike, and it was just not a good deal. I'm a fighter. You know, I'm one of those people that something strange happens to me. My perception gets all weird when I start drinking. And so, for instance, if I'm in a bar and you look at me in a strange way, I don't know how to tell you. You know, that kind of offends me when you look at me that way. I don't know how to say that. And so instead, I just punch you in the mouth. And he was a lot like that, too. And so, except that when you're in a home together, there's only one person you could kind of be upset with. And so if I looked at him the wrong way, he'd want to punch me in the mouth. And that doesn't necessarily work for me. Or if he looked at me the wrong way, I'd have to punch him in the mouth. And, you know, it just didn't work out that way. And interestingly, on the way here, you know, we were driving past when I had kind of run away to San Clemente one time. And people from the harbor area don't leave. Like, so it's like, oh my gosh, she moved to Orange County? Wow. Must be really bad. And I moved to Orange County, and he found me. And so and he, like, tried to break into my apartment in the middle of the night. And I'm not good, like I mentioned, at saying I'm displeased with you breaking into my apartment. So I stabbed him. And it's interesting, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution when there's these disagreements. It says, you know, in the two wives chapter, it says we should say, this is getting heated. I think that we should discuss this. I don't know that that would have worked for my situation back then. So I stabbed him. But and you know, obviously he did not like that. But I knew that there was lots of problems going on in my life. Like, so we had lived previously in this area of Wilmington called Ghost Town. And Ghost Town is like where people buy crack cocaine and heroin. And it's just like not a necessarily good area. And the FBI had come into our house and messed it all up and all this stuff. And I just knew that there were problems. My husband didn't work a traditional job. He was a salesman of outside issues. And new one. I remember getting into Alcoholics Anonymous, and people would say things like outside issues, and I was like, what is that? And just for the new one, drugs. It means drugs. So just demystify the code all together. And I knew that there was a problem. And even during that time, I'm trying to live a normal life. I'm really trying to live this double life as it talks about in the book. I was kind of a Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde, and I was going to college at the time, and I had gotten a degree in paralegal studies, and I'm trying to work for law firms. But I was struggling a little bit, and I knew that, you know, he was part of the problem. And once I got rid of him, I could kind of, you know, live the way I'd like to. And basically, I wanted to be able to drink the way I wanted to. And so I, you know, we kind of got rid of him, and I was able to drink the way I wanted to. But see, what I wanted to basically meant, like, you know, sometimes I'd have to leave the kids because I would be partying, and I'd be partying all night. And sometimes I don't have time to come home and change to get ready for work. So I just show up to work kind of like the way I was at the party. But I'm no fool. Like, I would dust off the glittery stuff. And, you know, if I had glittery stuff on, and I would. But halters are never really a good look for law firms. And so I would try to smush the hair back in the center. And oftentimes the office manager would call me into the office because they were displeased. Like, I reeked of alcohol and I looked a mess. And she'd call me into the office often and say, you know, what on earth? And it's all in the approach, I have to tell you. She would say things like, you know, what on earth were you thinking coming to work like that? And I don't know how to take that because I'm still ghetto fabulous. And I would say things like, what, you talking crap? You want to take this outside? You know, new one, no, that's never a good way to keep a job. And so, needless to say, I'm going from job to job, but it's never my fault. And that's the big thing that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that it was never my fault. She shouldn't have talked to me that way. She should learn to be patient. After all, she is the office manager. Wasn't it obvious I was at a party last night? All right, then. You know, just crazy. So I'm going from job to job, and I don't necessarily see the problem. You know, and it's amazing to me how cunning, baffling, powerful this disease is, because I couldn't see the problem. And I'll tell you what a regular day for me looked like. I'd wake up in the morning, not to an alarm like I did this morning, but to my two little ones, who were, I think, 3 and 4 years old. And they would come to my bed, which was a mattress on the floor, because I'd lived in this place for about a year. I just hadn't had time to unpack. And so they would come to my mattress, and they'd have a glass of vodka and whatever, because they knew that that's what I needed to do to get up. See, it's not because I need alcohol. It's because I have this condition, and I don't know what it is. I looked into it. I had gone to the library to find out what was wrong with me, and I found out, because that's where everybody goes when you think you have a health problem, right, to the library. And so I found out that I may have this rare brain tumor. I may be schizophrenic, possibly bipolar. There's another thing. Oh, possibly a tapeworm, because I drank a lot. And I knew it had to go somewhere. It's crazy. So they would bring me my vodka, and that was the only way that I can get up in the morning. See, Newen, when I woke up, I was 25 years old when I first walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. But even at 25 years old, I had this knot in my gut every morning, this huge amount of heaviness in my chest, and I would shake. And the only thing that ever fixed it was like vodka and whatever. And so that's the way I woke up every morning. But I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And the way that, so I would take the girls to school, and I would drink on the way to take them to school. I would drop them off and get to work. But only alcoholics drink while you're working, so I didn't do that. I didn't drink while I'm working. But at 12 o'clock, I'd go across the street and go to the Mexican restaurant, and I'd have a margarita and two shots of tequila. But, like, shots they're like this big. Like, they don't count for anything. And because otherwise I'd be an alcoholic. But I had chips and salsa, and so it's not like I'm not eating, right? And I always kept a bottle of Southern Comfort in squirt. And it was a squirt bottle that had about this much squirt in it and all Southern Comfort. I didn't want people to think I was an alcoholic, so I just drank out of the squirt bottle. Because you couldn't tell that I had been drinking, I'm sure. And I would drink that on the way to pick the girls up from school. I would get home and I would start making dinner. And then I would do that all over again. And I did that Monday through Sunday, because my kids didn't know what day of the week it was. They were too little. And my kids were really apparent to pick out on the playground. My kids were the ones that had the dirty uniforms and their shoes on backwards and their hair was unkempt because their mommy wasn't looking out for them. And it's nothing personal. Alcohol just comes first, no matter what. But I couldn't. There's no way I could have been an alcoholic. And so So I was at work, I was working with this lady who was really, really nice. She was just a good person. And she, you know, we worked with injured workers. They'd come up to where our desk was. And she was always so willing to help them. And I just thought she was just a really neat person. And one day she asked if I would go to the storage closet for her. And I noticed she had a chip on the end of her keychain that said Alcoholics Anonymous. And I asked her about it, and she said she had been a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew that that meant you don't drink alcohol. But she was so nice, and I knew, like, in my heart, like, heart, that she must smoke weed every day. Because, like, who's nice like that all the time? Like, who's all happy, joyous, and free? I just didn't get that. And so I asked her about the chip, and she told me that she was a sober member, and I was just floored. This was like in July, and she said, you know, I don't take a drink or anything that affects me from the neck up a day at a time. And I was like, wow, what do you do for Christmas? Oh, my God, New Year's. And she's like, I just don't take in anything. And I was really floored. And until she said, you know, you should really check out this meeting on 3rd and Miramar. I think you'd really like it. I remember thinking, how rude. Just because you're an alcoholic does not mean that I am an alcoholic. And so I wasn't going to be checking out some meeting. But I had a friend who was definitely alcoholic. She stole booze. And in my mind, if you steal booze, you're an alcoholic. I hate to tell you. And so so I invited my friend to this meeting so she can get the help she needed. And so I sit there in this meeting, and I hear this. It was a participation meeting. This woman named Dodie G shared, and she caught my attention. She said she was from Wilmington, and I was like, wow, who cops to the fact that they're from Wilmington? And she talked about having two kids, and I remember thinking, maybe I can hear some suggestions as to how to help with my kids because I'm struggling a little. And she talked about the way she drank, and my heart just sank because I knew that that meant that if I drank like that, I was probably an alcoholic. And it just really kind of freaked me out a little bit. That first meeting, I remember just sobbing. So I was getting ready to leave, and this woman approached me, and she said, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, I don't have any money, because I didn't know what sponsorship was about. And she said, no, I'm going to help you stay sober a day at a time. And I said, you know, I was like, okay. And she said, I want you to do 90 meetings in 90 days. I want you to call me every day until I tell you not to call me. We're going to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to go through this big book here. And she gave me a big book. And she said, we're just going to do this a day at a time. You're going to work with other people. You're going to be of service. And she was like all smiles and everything and super excited. And I just remember thinking, oh, no, I knew I should have stayed away from this girl. But I thought she was just a little overzealous for this whole thing, just kind of way too into it. And so I said, you know, I'm not really like into. And she's like, just do what we do. And I said, okay. And so, but I didn't necessarily. And this is in August of 95. So I called her as I felt like I needed her, which is maybe once or twice a month. I went to meetings kind of like as I saw fit. And that was maybe 2-3 times a month. I didn't need to work the steps. I mean, I'm an intelligent girl. I went through the book, and I noticed that, like, not all of them were completely necessary. You know, I said, you know, I mean, so my life is unmanageable, maybe, but powerless? I mean, really, it's a liquid. I mean, like, I can't just not put down a liquid. And that just didn't make sense to me. And but I really liked the 12 step, like passing this on to other alcoholics. I just thought that was a good one. And I was just convinced that I was just going to pass it on. I don't know what I thought I was passing, but I know it wasn't very good. And so I really didn't do anything. And by January of 96, a friend of mine, because my sponsor had said, get some friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, you know, I've got plenty of friends. I don't need new friends. And so I hung out with my old friends, and someone invited me to a bar. And I said, well, I don't drink. And they said, well, that's it. Who's going to make you drink? Just come. And I said, well, yeah, that's probably right. I mean, big deal. So I go to the bar, and I'm having a blast. And someone offers me a drink. And I say, you know, that's kind of different than, like, me paying for it. It's not the same. And so I decided I'm just going to have 3 drinks and then cut it off, and then I'm good. And I remember the 3. And then the next thing I knew, I was on the ground in this quaint little establishment called the Catalina Inn. It's for the frugal. You can, you know, you can pay by the hour. It's a lovely little place. And so I come to at the Catalina Inn, and this is the first time it had ever happened to me, and I pray to God that it's the last. My mind was perfectly clear, and my body just wouldn't function. And I just couldn't believe that that happened like that for me. I didn't plan on getting drunk. And that was the first time in my whole life that I saw that, like, I never plan on getting drunk. I never plan on getting wasted. I never necessarily plan on ending up in these places and having these things happen to me. But that's essentially the way it is for me. And actually, that was a pretty good night. You know, I was telling TJ and I were talking before about how I was in TJ, the country, Mexico, and I was partying with friends, and I just came to in once again one of these frugal establishments, but it's not quite as nice as the frugal establishments in the U.S. Like the ones in Mexico aren't quite as nice. And I thought, because I had gotten into a fist fight in this bar, and so when I come to, I see this patch on my chest, and I thought, oh man, I must have got stabbed. So I go to look and see what happened, and I remove the bandage, and it was a tattoo. And that was quite alarming to, like, come to with a new tattoo. And I'm just grateful it didn't say anybody's name or anything like that. But yeah, that's the way it was for me. So I come to in this motel, and I knew a few things. I knew that when you talked about incomprehensible demoralization, that you were talking about that moment that I was there in the motel on the ground when I couldn't get myself up, when I had to beg those people I didn't even know to bring me a bottle of whatever that was on the other side of the room, and when they said those things about me, about being pathetic and about being a drunk. And I knew you were talking about what I felt. I knew that what the things that you were talking about when I would go to the meetings were probably true, and maybe I should start doing what you were doing. So I was able to get myself up off the ground after I had a couple of drinks. I walked home, and I walked home barefoot because I didn't know where my shoes were, my jacket was. I didn't know where my keys or my car was. And I get home, and I don't have a phone because I don't necessarily spend my money on things that are important. And so I had to get the change from around my house and go down to the payphone and call that sponsor. I told her I had gotten loaded, and I asked if she would please continue working with me. And she asked me something that was just absolutely pivotal in my life, and it changed my life completely. She asked me if I was entirely ready to do whatever it took to stay sober. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I am not a yes, ma'am kind of gal. Nobody tells me what to do. I work for myself today because I'm still not very good at that. But I was just sick and tired of my own ideas. I was sick and tired of, you know, my life and the choices I had made for my life. And I just couldn't continue like this. So I just got really willing to do what this woman had said. And honestly, I just thought she was just some really nice lady who just didn't quite get it. And so I start following her around, and we start working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it looked like that, you know, after going through the book with somebody else, that maybe my problems weren't as minimal as I thought. And I knew, like, I started writing this inventory, and I didn't want to share it with her, because truthfully, it was none of her business. And someone in the meeting told me that I probably won't be able to stay sober if I don't do a fifth step. And I wanted to at least try this for a little while and see if things would change. So I decided to share my fifth step with her. And I even decided to share with her the things that I knew I wasn't going to share with her. Because, you know, like I said, none of that's her business. And I made a great discovery. I discovered that my sponsor was a total slut. But I was really grateful for sharing my fifth step with her. You know, I kind of felt like I had earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was really afraid to go on to the rest of the steps. I was totally afraid. I knew I had to make amends. And I didn't want to have to make amends to some of these people because I knew I had really hurt some people, specifically my grandmother. You know, my grandmother was the one that was in my corner no matter what. And I didn't just hurt her because I was out drunk all the time. Like, I just created a lot of havoc in her life, havoc she didn't need. You know, she was held at gunpoint as a result of my behavior. You know, she was, one time I had gone, I told her I was going to go to the pizza parlor. I said, I was just going to have a pitcher of beer, one pitcher. And I said, could you watch the girls? She goes, just make sure you come back, like in an hour. And I said, of course, don't be ridiculous. And I meant that when I said it. And I go to the pizza parlor, and some of my friends come by, and they ask me if I want to go with them to purchase outside issues. And newcomer, you know what that means now, right? And so I go with them to do that. And the next thing I know, I'm in Mexico. And I wasn't going to call her at 4 in the morning and say, well, I'm going to be a little late. And so, like, time just kept passing, and there was never an appropriate time to call. And next thing I know, it's a month later. And so when I finally did go home, I figured I'd just, like, act like nothing happened. That was, like, my best thinking. So I get there and I knock on the door, and she has one of those metal screen doors, and she goes, I don't know where you've been. You look horrible, but the girls aren't going with you. I was totally overwhelmed with fear, and that wasn't going to be okay with me. So I go into my car, where I had a towel in the trunk, and I wrapped it around my fist. I bust out her front windows, and I jump inside, and I get nose to nose with her, and I said, old lady, you think you're ever going to take my kids? You're going to be sorry. How do you make that right? And so I told my sponsor, I don't know how I'm going to fix this. I said, you know, she won't even let me in the house anymore unless somebody is there with her because she's afraid of what I'm going to do. And my sponsor said, just be a granddaughter to her. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Your granny doesn't drive. Take her to the grocery store every, you know, whenever she wants to go. So I started taking her to the grocery store every Sunday. And we started developing this relationship. And she'd want me to take her to Denny's after we went grocery shopping. And I really don't like Denny's. And so I told my sponsor, you know, this isn't really working. I don't like Denny's. And my sponsor says, yeah, you're going to have to get to learn to like Denny's. And she would order for me because she wanted to be a grandmother to me. And she would order Moons Over Miami. I just hate Moons Over Miami. And my sponsor says, you can learn to like Moons Over Miami. And that was a lie. I never did. But what did happen was I got to establish this relationship with that grandmother. And by the time I was 5 years sober, you know, her and I were good. And she had called me one day and she said, you know, Chris, I found out I had cancer and I didn't want to say anything. But I can't take care of myself anymore. And I was wondering if you would move in and help me die. And, you know, what an honor. You know, and I get welled up because that was the impossible to me. You know, and that was only Alcoholics Anonymous that was able to change that. And I don't know why. I always say this. I have no idea why after all these years it still makes me cry. But I just, it's amazing to me what happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when you're willing. And you know, New One, I want you to know something about the book. You know, it's a really awesome book. Like, if I would have not gone through the book or worked the steps, I probably would have done things a lot differently, and I probably wouldn't be here today. But my sponsor told me there's a chapter called Into Action. She pointed that out specifically because she said, you know, Chris, there's not a chapter into how I'm feeling. She says there's not a chapter into what I'm thinking. It's called Into Action. And if I wouldn't have taken the action to change that relationship with my grandmother, that whole deal would have gone down way differently. But that last breath she took, it was her and me. And that was a good deal. You know, at her memorial service, it was full of you people and the nuns that facilitated the memorial, because she was really close with the sisters at that church. You know, they were like, gosh, your grandmother has some very interesting friends. I said, she does. And you know how, you know, my granny got to know you guys. Because, and this is the one benefit that I experience is being a part of a home group and getting to know some people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm not going out to meetings because it's hard. When somebody is dying of cancer, you can't necessarily leave them alone. And we didn't have money at the time to hire a nurse. And so, you know, we're just taking turns taking care of granny and going to meetings sometimes. And my home group would bring meetings to me because they knew I wasn't getting out. They would show up without even being asked with food because they knew I wasn't thinking about cooking. And it was just such a blessing to be a part of this group of amazing people. People just like me, who society said, you're just a mess and you're probably never going to be able to get this. And it's changed our lives completely. Life on life's terms happens, newcomers. We're not shielded from life's bullets. And those two daughters were raised here in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I used to have to bring them to meetings because I didn't have anybody to babysit because they would think I wasn't going to come back. And so I would bring the girls to meetings, and they had their little video games, and they had their headsets and little books and coloring books. I really didn't think they were listening. And one day I get a call from my youngest daughter's pre-K teacher, and Mrs. Kim says, you know, Ms. Hernandez, is everything okay at home? And I said, well, yeah, why? And she said, they went to Catholic school, and she said, I was telling the kids how Jesus had turned water into wine at the wedding at Cana. And Melanie was raising her hand to get my attention, and when I called on her, she said, Mrs. Kim, I think Jesus is an alcoholic. She says, anybody who needs booze that bad has a problem with their drinking. And Mrs. Kim asked me, you know, Mr. Hernandez, where would she get that? And I said, I have no idea. But that same little girl about a year ago got her first DUI. 3 weeks later, got her second DUI. She doesn't think she's an alcoholic. It was a hit and run, assault on a police officer and resisting arrest. Yeah, it's quite obvious she's my child, isn't it? But she's not an alcoholic. And, you know, I found that I'm powerless over alcohol no matter who's drinking it. And I just get to be an example to her. You know, and that's a hard, hard pill to swallow. You know, Diana and I have talked about that for, boy, over and over. And there's really nothing I can do except love her. But it's so painful to watch your kids suffering from alcoholism. And now I get it. Now I get it. New One, I want you to know that when I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really thought I loved what you had here, and I really wanted what you had. But I thought that if I had the car and the big bank account and the beautiful home and all this stuff, that life would be good. And I have to tell you, that stuff is great. But in the middle of the night, when your alcoholism is telling you that, you know, that night train is a better idea, that big bank account isn't going to change that. And neither is, you know, the big house and the dream car or any of that. What I found is the only thing that's worked for me is being in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I recommend that you do that. You get right in the middle, you find a sponsor, you do what we do, and maybe you'll be able to live how we live. So thank you for my life. Mm-hmm.